On the federal level, the agency that oversees the program is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and also referred to as CMS. And the federal government pays about 57 cents of every dollar spent on Medicaid in Florida. It is the largest source of federal funding in the state. The services that are provided through Medicaid are provided through a variety of providers that the state contracts with. And in recent years, the state has significantly increased its contracts with managed care organizations like HMOs to provide care. And many Medicaid recipients in Florida are required to enroll in these organizations in order to get care. I'm going to talk a little bit about eligibility criteria. Being poor is not enough to qualify for Medicaid. You also have to fit into certain categories of coverage. And in Florida, these categories are broadly referred to as family-related Medicaid and SSI-related Medicaid. And included in the materials is a DCF publication called Family-Related Medicaid Programs Fact Sheet. And actually, if for some reason you weren't able to pull that attachment off the email you got, it's also available on DCF's website. And it gives an overview of the different eligibility categories under family-related Medicaid, which includes low-income families getting cash assistance, pregnant women, and children and youth through the age of 20. The SSI-related Medicaid includes people getting SSI, people with disabilities, people in nursing homes, and in Medicaid waiver programs. And if you go onto DCF's website, you can get the SSI-related fact sheet as well, which gives more details about these categories of coverage. In addition to having to meet one of these categories, there are also financial and technical requirements that have to be met, including income and resource limits, citizenship or qualified non-citizen requirements, and residency. The family-related Medicaid fact sheets give more specifics on these requirements. The bottom line is, in Florida, you have to be very low income to qualify. And for example, for children and youth through the age of 18, the household income cannot exceed 100% of the poverty level. And today that amounts to $1,767 per month for a household of four. Younger children, the income limits are a bit higher. And for children, the state is going to look at the income of any parent that's living with the child, any child support received for that child, and the income of other relatives living in the household cannot be counted. However, as you'll hear more about in the training, the good news is for youth aging out of foster care, there are no asset or income eligibility tests for Medicaid eligibility. So if you're in that category of youth aging out of foster care, there's not going to be any looking at the asset or income test. One concept that I wanted to just make people aware of, because I think there's some problems with the way this is implemented in Florida, is there is a key federal requirement under Medicaid that if someone is no longer eligible for Medicaid under one particular category of eligibility, the state is not supposed to terminate eligibility until it determines whether the individual is eligible under any other category of Medicaid. So, for example, if a child moves from foster care into relative care, we think the federal law requires that the state continue the Medicaid eligibility for that child. Now we understand that there are that this may not be happening, that the relatives may need to reapply for services, and that's an issue that we're really interested in hearing more about from the field on what's happening there. So our contention is that although the living situation may change for a child in care, their Medicaid coverage category may change, the child is still eligible for Medicaid and should not be cut off when this change occurs. And similarly, as we discussed in a minute or so, for youth aging out of foster care, there should not be disruptions in Medicaid because they do qualify for another Medicaid coverage category, and their transition to this category of coverage should be seamless to them. Finally, I wanted to go back to the EPSDT program and talk a little bit about that to sort of underscore why retaining this Medicaid eligibility is so important for foster care youth aging out. As I said, it's a comprehensive benefit available to all Medicaid-eligible children and youth. It includes medical, vision, dental, and hearing screenings periodically, and any follow-up treatment that's needed to correct or ameliorate a physical or mental condition. So its coverage is very broad. And in the materials, there is an EPSDT fact sheet that's put out by the National Health Law Program, which has a lot of expertise and does a lot of advocacy on the EPSDT program. And included in that fact sheet is a list of all the services that under federal law, state Medicaid programs must be covering. So although some services are considered optional services for adults, for children and youth through the age of 20, the state doesn't have discretion. They must provide coverage for those services for children and youth. And it is a very extensive list. I urge you to take a look at it. One of my personal favorites is there's a catch-all category, which, quoting from a federal law, reads, it includes diagnostics, screening, preventive, and rehabilitative services recommended for the maximum reduction of physical or mental disability and restoration of an individual to the best possible functional level. So as lawyers, you know, we love language like that. It gives us a lot of potential ammunition. That's sort of my whirlwind tour through the Medicaid basics, and I know it's a lot to take in at some time, but we're going to now turn to specifically youth aging out of foster care, and Stephanie is going to talk about that.
All right, in order to understand which young adults coming out of foster care are entitled to Medicaid, I want to make sure everyone first understands what it means when someone is eligible for independent living. Because children who were transitioning out of foster care were doing so horrible, they were ending up in jail, in psychiatric institutions, they were homeless and unemployed, the feds gave the states a lot of money to beef up their independent living programs. And Florida responded with a comprehensive system to train children under 18 who are in foster care and to provide services to young adults after they turn 18. And these services are spelled out in Florida Statute 409.1451, which we included in our materials. So when someone talks about whether a young adult is in independent living, they are referring to three different programs. The first one is the Road to Independence Scholarship, which is also referred to as the RTI Scholarship. This program provides a monthly stipend to children over 18 who are in school full-time. To be eligible for the RTI program, the child must have been in foster care for 6 months, and that could be 6 months at any time in their lives. They must have been adjudicated dependent, and they have been in foster care when they turned 18. In other words, they aged out of foster care. Now, in 2007, the Florida legislature expanded the eligibility criteria for RTI to include children who were adopted after the age of 16 and children who, after turning 16, spent 6 months in foster care and then were placed in permanent guardianship. So that expansion is causing a lot of problems in the Medicaid realm, but I'll talk about that. The second program that children over 18 are eligible for is transitional services, and these are services to children who may not be in school full-time but still need financial or other support in order to become independent. To be eligible for transitional services, the child, again, must have been in foster care for 6 months at any time in their lives, and they must have aged out of foster care. And the last program is called aftercare support, and these are basically emergency and referral services. If the child's going to be evicted or if their lights are going to be turned off, they can go in and within 24 hours get some cash. The only eligibility requirement for the aftercare services is that the child must have aged out of foster care. In other words, when they right before they turned 18, they were in foster care. So how does Medicaid fit into this? Florida Statute 409903, subsection 4, which we've also included, states that any child who is eligible for independent living services is entitled to Medicaid until they turn 21, and or you can say through the age of 20, which is right before their 21st birthday, it'll end. Prior to July 2007, the cutoff was the child's 20th birthday, so in 2007 they expanded it up until 21. So the important thing to remember is that any foster care child who ages out of foster care is eligible for Medicaid regardless of income or assets or resources. So even a child who's not interested in receiving any independent living services right then, they're still entitled to Medicaid. So it's not whether they're receiving the services, it's whether they are eligible to receive the services. And also with the new eligibility for RTI in 2007, that expansion of those kids who were adopted or placed in permanent guardianship after 16, they are also entitled to Medicaid up until they turn 21. So that covers who's entitled to Medicaid. Now the question becomes, how is it supposed to happen, and how does it happen in reality? And this is where it becomes problematic. We know that for every child that ages out of foster care, in other words, they're in foster care up until they turn 18, their Medicaid is supposed to automatically continue. And we attached the memorandum from Medicaid in our packet of materials, and this is an August 2007 transmittal memo to the Medicaid staff, that states, as all young adults aging out of foster care meet this criteria, CIC staff should continue their Medicaid eligibility for the next 3 years without additional contact from family safety or community-based care. So as Anne said, it should happen seamlessly. So that's how it should happen. In my experience, this is how it happens with the RTI recipients. When the child turns 18 and they're accepted to the Road to Independence Scholarship and they're going straight in, it happens. I mean, there's a seamless transition. There's no problems with the Medicaid. It seems that, though, for children who aren't getting RTI when they turn 18, it seems that their dependency case just closes, and that's the end of it. The child doesn't know if they're getting Medicaid. There's no Medicaid card given. It's just very confusing. So there are often problems with children who, again, aren't necessarily going to be receiving services right after they turn 18, but they're eligible for them, or the children who maybe were only in foster care for a few months before turning 18. So with these children, actually with all children, I would recommend that you make sure all of your clients have their Medicaid cards before they turn 18. And an example of where this became a problem, we had a client who came into care 3 months before turning 18 because she needed emergency medical treatment, and the mother wouldn't get it for her because it was against the mother's religion. So we knew this kid was going to have extensive medical issues after she turned 18. So right before she turned 18, we went to court to make sure that there wouldn't be a problem with her Medicaid. The CBC's first argument was that she wasn't going to be using any independent living services, and therefore she was not eligible for Medicaid. Well, we were able to combat that because it doesn't matter if she's going to be getting them or not. She was eligible for aftercare support. Secondly, they argued that when she turned 18, she simply needed to go and apply for Medicaid, which I don't know if your clients are the same as my clients, but it's hard to get some of my 18-year-olds to do anything, much less go to DCF and apply for Medicaid. So we didn't want to have this added burden onto our clients. So we got our judge to sign an order stating that the child was eligible for independent living services because she was eligible for aftercare, and she was therefore entitled to Medicaid, and that the department was responsible for ensuring her Medicaid was maintained. I thought we had given a copy of that order to be added to your materials. I'm going to double-check that, and if it's not there, I'll make sure that a copy of the order goes out. So the tips that I would give you is to make sure that children have their Medicaid card before turning 18, and if you think there's going to be an eligibility issue or an eligibility issue on their independent living, go ahead and get an order from the judge before the child turns 18 so there's no confusion. Now, the really fuzzy question occurs with this new set of children who are entitled to the Road to Independence Scholarship, but they exited foster care at 16, after 16. These children are clearly eligible once they turn 18, but the question is, are they responsible for making it happen? Do they even know that they have to do anything? What if when they turn 16 they went into an adoptive placement where they weren't entitled to Medicaid? We don't really know how this is going to work because DCF does not have a written policy on it yet, so we're waiting for that written policy. We're hoping that they develop a method of somehow flagging these kids so that once they turn 18, the Medicaid will automatically continue or will automatically be reinstated. But again, this is a fuzzy area. We don't know how it's going to play out. So because we don't know, I think it's really important for the guardians to inform the children as they're going into this adoptive or permanent guardianship placement, to inform the kids that they are entitled to Medicaid once they turn 18, and that if they're having trouble getting the Medicaid, they need to seek assistance from their local legal services office immediately. And finally, I would suggest that you ask the courts to retain jurisdiction on these clients so that the children have the option of either bringing the issue up in court or going through a Medicaid fair hearing. You know, you always have the option of asking the court to retain jurisdiction after the child turns 18 in order to make sure they get their independent living services. I would also suggest you do that for these kids who are turning 16 who are going to be eligible at 18 for the independent living services.
Okay, well, I just want to, on the outline, talk a little bit about, and I think Stephanie has touched on some of these already, but, you know, why are people having youth aging out? Why are these gaps in coverage happening, as it does, as we're hearing anecdotally? You would think with the Department of Children and Families 2007 transmittal, where they're saying all youth aging out of foster care should automatically get the Medicaid continued, that there wouldn't be a problem. I've got some hypotheses about why this is happening, which I want to share, but also this is an area where we're really eager to hear feedback from GALs about if they're aware of these cases, because we are trying to drill down where in the process there may be some breakdowns. But there's actually, first of all, I think there's still a lot of confusion out in the field about youth aging out and whether they are eligible for Medicaid. And, you know, the law that passed in 2007 makes it clear if they're eligible for independent living services, whether or not they're getting them, they should get their Medicaid. But I don't think that message has totally gone out to everybody on the front lines. If you run into, you know, folks saying, no, they have to have a Road to Independence scholarship, I mean, we need to be educating people that that's not right.
That's what I'm not aware.
Also, typically Medicaid recipients have to annually go through a redetermination of eligibility process. And for children in foster care, there are actually two parts of the Department of Children and Families that have to interact with each other and communicate and coordinate in order for this process to work correctly. And from what we understand, the Department of Children and Families, their magic computer, spits out these redetermination notices which for children in care typically go to a caseworker with the economic self-sufficiency staff, which is the part of DCF that does Medicaid eligibility determinations. And then that caseworker is supposed to be communicating with the family safety or CBC staff about these issues. So for this to work right, there has to be good and accurate communication between the family safety and CBC workers and the economic self-sufficiency services staff with DCF. So if a youth is not identified to the eligibility staff of DCF as somebody who's aging out, their Medicaid may be terminated when they turn 18, or maybe even a year later if DCF erroneously sends a notice of redetermination out when they should not be doing that. The other complication for youth turning 18 is they apparently are not getting, they don't get anything from DCF, as I understand, confirming that they have this eligibility through age 20. They don't get a Medicaid card. They don't get sent any notices. And so, I think that is contributing to the problem. And I think, you know, one area that we're thinking it would be helpful to do advocacy on with the Department of Children and Families, and we'd love your feedback on this, is, you know, to be advocating that they need to have a procedure where youth aging out actually get a written notice from DCF confirming their continued eligibility for Medicaid through age 20, and also to a policy that says, you know, they have to get a Medicaid card, their Medicaid card, when they age out. So those are some of the potential issues that we might work on, and we would really appreciate your feedback on that. The other thing I wanted to talk a minute about was Medicaid fair hearing strategy. Stephanie talked about some of the strategies in juvenile court to try to ensure continued Medicaid coverage. The Medicaid fair hearing process is something that can be done in conjunction with any juvenile court strategies, and there is expertise among our network of children's legal services attorneys to represent youth in these administrative hearings. And one of the really great things about the Medicaid fair hearing process is if Medicaid coverage is terminated and it's an erroneous termination, there is a requirement that the services be reinstated if the person asks for a Medicaid fair hearing within 10 days of receiving written notice of the action to terminate the services. Well, we know our clients, the children and youth, are not getting these notices. So we think that at any point, you know, if their Medicaid gets terminated and it appears to be erroneous, that requesting the fair hearing gives grounds to advocate for immediate reinstatement of the eligibility and the coverage. We recently worked with Bernie Perlmutter in the Miami Children's Clinic on a case involving specialized therapeutic foster care services where there was a termination of those services with no notice. And that is the strategy that we pursued. We did the fair hearing request, and the agency immediately agreed that services needed to be reinstated. So I just mentioned that because that is another tool that's available to try to minimize disruptions in Medicaid coverage for youth. I'm going to take just the last couple of minutes to talk a little bit about Medicaid for youth 18 up to 21, who for some reason might not qualify for the independent living services, which, again, you know, should if they're youth aging out of foster care, they should be able to get this coverage. But if for some reason there's some folks who are falling through the cracks, they don't meet those criteria, it's important for you to know that there are other bases for Medicaid coverage for this group of youth that that you should be aware of, and that that you should know that there are ways to get this coverage through the Department of Children and Families. Again, there is a coverage category for all children and youth at living in households that are below poverty level, and that coverage category covers youth up through age 18. That would take care of somebody through age 18, and the income of a non-parent caretaker should not be counted for that coverage category. With a relative up through age 20 should be able to get Medicaid coverage. Also, if they're getting SSI disability benefits, they will automatically qualify for Medicaid up beyond age 21, as long as they're getting SSI and as long as they continue to be disabled. There are other coverage categories that relate to youth who are pregnant. They can qualify for Medicaid. So, again, if you've got a client that's turning 18 and for some reason they're not considered a youth aging out of foster care.
Rado or your Rado?
Many of other eligibility coverage.
AURADO.
Are
I'm sorry, let me interrupt you for 1 second. Someone doesn't have their phone on mute, and we can hear your conversation. It's kind of hard to hear the speaker, so if I could ask everyone to just recheck their phone and make sure it's on mute. I'm sorry to interrupt. Thank you.
That's okay. And just kind of a basic message here is that if you've got somebody, a client you're working with who's turning 18 and their Medicaid benefits are getting terminated, this should be a red flag to have somebody with some expertise help you take a look at this and consider filing a fair hearing request, which also, again, is a very simple thing. We can provide some form. It's just a letter that has to be sent to the Department of Children and Families, and we can certainly get you a sample of that. And often just the filing for the fair hearing request does the trick to get the problem resolved. The other thing to know is that if some youth is erroneously terminated from Medicaid and they or someone on their behalf has actually spent money for medical care that would otherwise be covered by Medicaid during that gap in coverage, they have a right to reimbursement. And, you know, if they can substantiate that this was money paid out of pocket and that they were eligible at the time the services were provided. So in conclusion, there's just a couple little take-home messages we wanted to reinforce, and then we were going to open it up for questions and comments. And like I said, we appreciate any insights you have onto these issues and feedback, because you're out there on the ground doing this work. But our basic take-home messages are that youth aging out of foster care have enforceable legal rights to continued Medicaid coverage, and this includes legal rights to a comprehensive package of medical and other health-related services that are available under the EPSDT program, and that there's a network of legal services, legal aid, and other Florida Bar Foundation-funded attorneys available throughout the state to represent youth in enforcing these legal rights. If you identify cases where you think that this representation would be helpful for a child, or if you have need help on one of these issues, as I said, Stephanie and I are available. I know that Paolo Anino with the FSU Children's Advocacy Clinic has been and will continue to be a point of contact for guardian ad litems
who are needing representation for a youth on or children on Medicaid issues. So he also is available to be a point of contact. So with that, I'm going to be quiet and and respond to any questions. Stephanie and I are available to answer. We've totally confused everybody.
We have a question. I understand that non-citizen children don't qualify for Medicaid. How can we get those children qualified? Is there any way we can get those children qualified?
Well, right. That is a group of youth that it is. If they don't meet the federal definition of a non-qualified, whatever the term is, citizen, non-qualified non-citizen, they're not going to be able to access Medicaid. However, this is something that we're trying. Our task force is going to try to pull together maybe some information on what the alternative sources of care might be. There are some links, some web links to which I'm happy to share with people on where actually Blue Cross Blue Shield has tried to pull together a website that county by county includes medical clinics and other providers that are available for the uninsured. But I think it's going to vary a lot from locality to locality. So I don't have a good answer for you. Other questions? Okay. I don't know. Did our contact information go out, like our email? And
I don't know that it was included in the initial materials that were sent out, but if you want to send those to Mary Kay, I'm sure we could send those out to all of the same folks to make sure they're on there so they receive the information.
Okay, we'll also go ahead and send out a copy of the order that we referred to in a sample letter for a fair hearing request.
Great. Are there any other questions for Ann or Stephanie?
Well, we appreciate being able to talk to you all and hope we can stay in touch with you.
Well, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us and giving us the great information. And we'll look forward to talking to everyone on the phone for part 2.